I'm here on behalf of Donald Tester and Robert Salina.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Brandon Pratt appearing on behalf of Elliot Bernstein, and I also have the
Okay, so this was a hearing that was set pursuant to an order of so the rule has been invoked. Are there any witnesses on either side that are not parties that are going to testify? Please stand up. Okay, so...
Non-parties, Your Honor.
What?
Non-parties.
Non-parties. Parties are allowed to stay.
All right. I believe Mr. Tester and Mr. Spleen are non-parties in the state proceeding.
No, they've been named by your client.
Well, they're in the heading of the adversary proceeding.
Okay.
So they're here. Okay.
And they also don't.
So, what's your name, ma'am? Who's standing? Your name?
Kimberly Moran.
Okay, and all right, so Kimberly, you may or may not be called as a witness. You need to wait outside. You can't allow anyone to discuss their testimony in your presence, or you participate in that as well. If someone violates what I just said, find my bailiff, let me know. We'll do it. Okay? All right.
Good afternoon, Judge. Just for the record, David Roth of Roth and Duncan on behalf of Ms. Moran.
Okay. Ms. Moran, the lady, please.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We should have
just for the benefit, the lawyers will tell me, Ms. Moran. He's an employee of
Heschman's Police. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, got it. Okay, so sounds like Mr. Pratt. I think probably from an orderly fashion, since I reserve this time for you to raise on behalf of your client, some of the regularities that I spoke about, I think you know.
Your Honor, if I might, just to refresh your memory, we had filed the motion to reopen the state. Especially Polina had filed a motion to reopen. Mr. Elliot Bernstein was here on his emergency motion, which was denied. That's what he filed. We actually filed.
Well, I said there was no, okay, so the order I have is the order on the emergency motion to freeze assets. I said there's no emergency.
Correct.
So, and then I just, but I announced what the purpose of the hearing was.
Yes, you did. It's embodied in the order, Your Honor.
Okay. So you want to go forward to address irregularities in the pleadings that Elliot says exist?
I believe that's the way we left it, Your Honor.
That's my recollection. I disagree in that he filed a motion to reopen the estate, an agreed order.
Right. I mean, I reopened it. That's not an issue. So whose pleadings are filed that are challenging the propriety of
pleadings? What propriety of that would be Mr. Bernstein. He filed it, but he filed it as part of the emergency motion.
Okay, so I understand. I'm not hearing an emergency. I'm not sure what you're getting at, Mr. Ventura. So what is it you're
saying? No, I'm just addressing the order, Judge, that you announced. That's all I'm addressing.
Paragraph 3 of the September 24th order.
Yes.
It says that the purpose of today's hearing is address any alleged improprieties or defects in the form of the pleadings or other documents submitted to the court in furtherance of the closing of the estate of Shirley Bernstein.
That's correct.
The person who filed the request to raise an allegation of impropriety was who?
The new agent. Actually, it's my position, Your Honor, that Mr. Tesher and Mrs. Bolina raised it voluntarily in their petition to reopen. while you did reopen it, they were the ones who actually brought the issue forward.
Okay, but, and I see their August 28th motion.
Right.
I reopened the estate. Okay, so they said that they thought that they wanted to give, using their words, persons the opportunity to cure the irregularities.
Right.
Someone needs to go formally identify the irregularities, unless you have a stipulation on what those are.
No, Your Honor, no written stipulation.
Okay, so to do this in an orderly way, which is all I'm getting at.
Yes, sir.
You think that you, okay, so the guy lets you go first on your side, Mr. Terry.
Yes, sir.
What irregularities, if any, are you going to point out to place?
We're going to point out we're going to take you through the issue of the submittance of the original waivers, which were returned by the clerk because of your, you know, method of doing that to require notarization, and then take you through the affirmation of those original waivers with current affidavits from the beneficiary reaffirming that they, in fact, acknowledge the original waivers, which were not notarized, with current affidavits with the original waivers attached to it. And we will walk the court through that exercise.
Okay, stop there. What is it that you want to tell me, Mr. Pratt, as to why you should go first?
Well, first off, I think this whole thing was brought about by the fact that my client, Elliot Bernstein, in fact, filed the emergency motion. As far as the...
That gets you nowhere, so we're long past that.
Okay. Number two, that they were seeking to reopen the estate, it was already reopened, and I don't know why they would be challenging the documents that they used to close the estate, but for Mr. Bernstein here filing his emergency motion, in which, although it was titled emergency, it brought up all of the issues that were currently here before this court. And it was only after he filed the motion in which he was contesting the validity of the waivers that this court, that they ended up filing their motion to reopen the estate. So it wasn't even brought to their attention.
What benefit is there to this process for you to go first?
Most
likely you're going to go, so we're only talking about this going to go first.
Okay, well, I mean, he's a petitioner, and I don't know that they are necessarily going to address all of the issues that we're going to bring up.
Okay, all right. So listen carefully, Mr. Blackwood.
Yes, sir.
That way we can move along. All right, go ahead.
All right, I brought some legal authority here I'd like to just point out. May I approach, Your Honor?
Sure, we'll do it on the counter because I'll look at that.
I'm just going to give a brief opening statement before I call my first witness, just to give you an overview of why we want this estate, I guess, to remain open rather than be closed, as far as that's kind of, I'm kind of a latecomer to the case, but I realize that's kind of the issue here.
Well, that would be helpful. Tell me what the issue is. That's true.
Okay. The issue is that, as far as I understand it, is whether or not the estate is going to remain open, although there was an order that was that reopened the estate. My understanding essentially is the personal representative essentially wants to, at this hearing, hopefully reclose the estate.
Based upon the most recent waivers of the county's petition for discharge and the pleadings filed on October 23rd, is that correct?
It's not exactly correct, Your Honor. We have no petition for discharge filed at the moment. The order specifically addresses what you're going to hear today. We had this whole thrust and parry, if you remember, the last hearing with Mr. Bernstein, who was without counsel at the time. That's why the order, pursuant to your ruling, is crafted the way it's crafted. It's a limited issue. You told Mr. Bernstein we're not going to be discussing the Shirley Bernstein Trust and all the distributions.
This is closing in
right.
The state of Shirley Bernstein.
Right. You went through this whole anemic work experience. You went through that whole thing.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So,
so the issue is the estate going to remain open or be closed, but there's no condition for discharge to close it until?
Or essentially address the validity of the waivers. I mean, if all of the beneficiaries have signed off on it, and we contend that they haven't, then it would be a foregone conclusion that the estate would then be closed. Because
who are the beneficiaries that have to sign off?
Well, I mean, that's one of the issues because...
From your point of view, who are the beneficiaries?
Well, our point of view, the beneficiaries that need to sign off would be one of the decedent, essentially. One of the decedents, Simon Bernstein. And then also potentially Elliot, or three of Simon and Shirley's children, Elliot, Lisa, and Jill. And if they contend that there was a power of appointment...
Just who do you say that, you know, right, okay, who would be ready to sign off?
All right, and
potentially... Simon, Elliot, Lisa, Jill.
Yeah, and if they contend that there was a valid power of appointment that was executed before the estate was closed, then there would be a total of six grandchildren that would have to have signed the waivers in some sort of capacity. If they were minors, then they would have to have maybe their parents sign waivers in that sort of capacity or administrator at land. There's also some issue as to whether or not that power of appointment expanded to include four additional grandchildren. So it may, and some of those grandchildren are over the age of 18, and if they contend that there was a power of appointment that was validly executed, which I believe that's the position they're taking, that would also include waivers by four additional grandchildren, Eric, Mike, Ellie, and Molly. And there would have been no documents or waivers signed by any grandchildren that have been filed in this case. In addition to, and as far as that's concerned, Elliot's waiver was invalidly executed. The reasons why, it was essentially, as shown in the Strassen case, there has to be an intentional relinquishment of the right. And the evidence that we're going to present is going to show that he signed the waiver, but in conjunction with him signing the waiver, he was always under the impression that he was still going to get financial information associated with the estate. They sent him the waiver without any financial information. When he sent it back, he sent it along with an email saying, oh, I'm still going to get all of this financial information. There's a series of emails spanning throughout the next year, emails and letters from Mr. Bernstein's car counsel in which he requested the information. So as far as Mr. Elliot Bernstein's waiver is concerned, this court shouldn't consider that to be valid. Also, many of the waivers have been forged. I think this court might recall from the last hearing that there was a series of waivers that had been forged that occurred after the prior personal representative had in fact died. And so that's another impropriety that we're going to present evidence on.
Okay. And then so if I find that Elliot's waiver was invalidated, you want the estate to remain open?
Exactly.
Okay. And then do what?
Well, we want to receive the financial information that he's been requesting since, you know, the estate was open. He didn't even find out he was a beneficiary until the time that he received the waiver. And essentially what we want to do is we want to receive financial information. We want a proper estate accounting. And if everything is, you know, as they say it is, then the estate will be closed after the production of various documents and a final accounting if we need to have a final accounting.
Okay, and if you prove that there were prior waivers that have been forged, what does that do?
Well, as far as the forgery goes, obviously those are going to be invalid.
Right. Now, those same individuals, and Mr. Mancera, correct me if I'm wrong, have now filled out and sent in new waivers.
Not only that, Judge, they've already been filed.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Otherwise, I wouldn't have to file. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as far as those waivers go, that's fine, except for, I guess, two important points. One is that Simon Bernstein's waiver, which was one of them that was forged, he's deceased, so obviously he couldn't have signed that waiver. So without some sort of waiver or something from the personal representative of his estate, it wouldn't be able to close. And then in addition to that, although there are several children that have reaffirmed their waivers, it wouldn't apply to all of the grandchildren who didn't have their, who don't have any waivers on file.
Okay, so let's put aside for a moment that Elliot's saying, I don't want my waiver recognized, I want financial information, I may want an accounting, and Sue goes from there. You only represent him, Elliot, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Is Simon representing you? Or anyone, if Simon's deceased, anyone needs to have here for him?
There was an order that appointed Ted as a personal representative of his estate.
Okay.
And
so
when it was reopened.
Okay, so is he, Ted Bernstein, PR of Simon Bernstein, complaining about any aspect of Shirley Bernstein's estate, including your position that his Simon's waiver may have been proper?
I'm unaware of any complaints that he made. We questioned his whether or not he has a conflict of interest in that he's a co-defendant, in which they've been alleged that billions of dollars have been taken in association with the estate. So we think that there's a conflict with his estate in the sense that Ted may have absconded with billions of dollars without Cy's knowledge, and therefore they may have a conflict of interest in that respect. But,
okay, but I would deal with that in
something
filed in Simon's estate. And we're limited only to Shirley's estate here.
Yes.
So, and the fact that the other individuals who supposedly had their waivers executed improperly now may have tried to cure them, they're not seeking any further relief from Shirley's estate, is that true?
Yeah, I believe Elliot really is the only one who's seeking to have documents produced and have the final accounting issue.
All right. So from a practical point of view, which we always have to keep our eye on the pool, is there any reason, I know from last hearing that there was a lot about the alleged impropriety, but now that you summarized of the prior waivers, but now that you have summarized the issues that you have, is there any reason why today I would go beyond that? Now that I've opened Shirley's estate and I'm entering an order dealing with Shirley's estate, I would focus in on the issue of whether Elliot has waived, as a beneficiary, whatever rights reportedly he has waived, and whether, and if I say no waiver, what to do about that? Is that the only area that Elliot could get to?
That and whether or not this court believed that the grandchildren would have had to have also signed waivers in order to have the estate closed.
Okay, but who the grandchildren of who?
The grandchildren of Shirley's estate.
Okay, but her children, the parents of those grandchildren, are the ones who signed waivers?
Yeah, but Elliot, they signed essentially, I guess, and there was no statement in there that they were signing on behalf of their children, and then in addition, if there's a contention that some of the grandchildren are beyond the age of 18, so there wouldn't be any sort of natural guardianship that would occur.
What's the way of standing to deal with that?
Which is standing to deal with that?
Issue that grandchildren may or may not be participating in.
As far as whether or not the estate was properly closed or not.
Or even though he may have no financial interest in where that issue may go.
He does have a financial interest.
I thought you said, okay, how is
well, because it would change the way that the estate was distributed.
Okay, how?
In this particular respect, well, Shirley's will devises her assets to three of her five children. It actually divides it to a trust which provides for her husband, which ultimately is supposed to go to three of her five children. There was a power of appointment in association with one of those, one or more than one of those trusts that gave her husband, Simon, the ability to potentially change the beneficiaries. But it was a limited power of appointment. And I think the question exists is, one, whether that document was validly executed or not, and then two, did that document go above and beyond what was required or what was allowed? Because there's a definition section underneath Shirley's trust that says she defines her children as Elliot, Lisa, and Jill, and specifically says for the purposes of this trust, Ted and Pam shall be treated as predeceased, and all of their children should be treated as predeceased. So if there's a determination or there's some sort of a distribution in which now they're telling Elliot that he is a beneficiary, and all of a sudden now he's not a beneficiary of the estate.
Well, you already made your point. We can deal with whether Elliot is a beneficiary, whether he's had a valid waiver. I've got that far down.
Okay.
But the question is, are there any other issues that you can deal with?
Okay, well, I think is the primary beneficiary. That's kind of the primary issue, but also the issue of whether or not certain people are considered beneficiaries of the estate.
But for Elliot to raise that, he has to be an interested person in the outcome of that proceeding.
And he is.
How is he affected by whether the grandchildren are deemed to be beneficiaries or not?
Because if there's kind of a two-stage analysis, if the grandchildren are beneficiaries, then he's not a beneficiary. If the grandchildren are
beneficiaries,
then he is not a beneficiary.
Okay.
And then the second phase of that is whether or not if the power of appointment was validly executed, then the question becomes, are his children entitled to half of the estate, or are they entitled to 3/10 of the estate?
Okay. All right. So
tell me what
the will says.
The will devises everything to a trust, and
okay, so they disagree with that. So is there, the will should say what it says. There shouldn't be too much dispute about that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable? You know what it says? As soon as you said that, they should be able
okay,
to
okay. I welcome to hear their
you have to discipline yourself right now. Only tell me that you can participate if you can answer all of my questions. I don't want advocacy for right now.
I
don't want you to be an advocate right now. Just tell me what the will says.
The will says that all the tangible personal property goes to Simon, who survived his wife, Shirley, and then the residue goes into what's known as an existing trust, which we call the Shirley Bernstein Trust.
I agree with that.
All
right,
so at the end of the day of this estate litigation, is there a contest that that's the provisions of the will? You said you were ready. Okay, so whatever Shirley had available to devise, personal fee to Simon, he's deceased, we can maybe deal with that or his estate, and then everything else to Shirley's trust.
Yes.
Okay, so his order limited us to Shirley's estate,
mm-hmm.
not to her trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty clear. So maybe I'm just confused.
Well, that's the financial, I guess the analysis goes a little bit deeper than that, because
if Shirley's assets, other than personal fees, go to her trust,
right,
none of the children are the beneficiaries or grandchildren are the beneficiaries under Shirley's will. Her trust is, correct?
That's right. But
and once the trust receives whatever assets there are, the provisions of the trust will rise and fall on who gets what?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true or not?
Pretty much. But I want to...
So his waiver, mm-hmm. going back, was the waiver a waiver that said to Elliot, waive whatever interest you may have in Shirley's estate?
No, it was just a waiver of a final accounting and certain service as a petition for discharge, just a normal estate closing waiver. That's all it was.
It sounds like, though, that on the estate level with Shirley, this is really a very simple matter. Is there something that I'm missing on the estate level? You know, I mean, one thing we learned here is we pick the matter in which we do our battles.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like on the estate level, Shirley's probate estate is simple. Simon gets her personal deed and her trust gets everything else. What could be more simple than that?
Yeah, I would agree that it is simple.
Okay, so you may have some litigation, some action pending in her trust case. Is there?
There is no trust case right now, and I just want to point out a couple of things as far as the trust code is concerned, and these are some of the statutes and court rules that I handed out.
Okay.
Florida Probate Rule 5.240 basically says the qualified benefit, if you have a situation where the personal representative of an estate is the same, you know, as a court over will type of situation and pours all the assets into the trust, and that the trustee is the same, that the qualified beneficiaries of the trust are considered interested parties for the estate proceedings.
Okay, and so let's assume I make everybody interested. You're still telling me that the command of the estate,
we just want
to
know
over everything that to the trust. Now, let me just read between the lines here. I don't know what the trust says. And I'm not asking about that. Is the issue whether the PR of the estate and who's the PR Ted?
Yes, currently. Okay.
Whether he is carrying out Shirley's mandate by transferring all Shirley's assets to the trust, is that an issue?
Yeah, I think that's it. We want to know how much was in her estate, and we want to know how much, you know, we just want a simple information related to the estate administration. There was, I guess the estate inventory said that there was $25,000. Elliot Bernstein believes that they were worth millions of dollars. And there could have been assets that were titled in the trust, but this is part of a bigger picture. We want to see what happened in the estate so that we can make sure that everything got properly transferred over to the trust.
Okay. Is Elliot involved? Tell me what the provisions of the trust say, you know, or say.
Yeah, I know what the provisions of the trust say, that essentially there's a trust that provides for the benefit of her husband while he's alive,
okay.
And then upon her death, the assets are supposed to be distributed to three of her five children,
who?
Elliot, Lisa, and Jill. Now, there was also a power of appointment that was I guess that trust also contained a provision that said for the purposes of that trust, her two of her five children, Ted and Pam, should be treated as pre-deceased. And then there's a power of appointment that's named in Simon's will that says, I want to appoint all of this money to all of his grandchildren, which is a little bit different from the provisions that were in Shirley's document.
Okay, so I'm just lost in one area.
Okay.
Because you mentioned Simon's will. So how does Simon's will get involved?
Simon's will gets involved because Shirley gave him a power of appointment a limited power of appointment to change the beneficiaries.
In the trust.
Yeah, exactly, okay. In the trust. And so he had the power.
Simon, during his lifetime, could or not execute the power of appointment.
Exactly.
Did he?
There is a power of appointment that exists in his will. And
okay. He can exercise the power of appointment in the
yeah.
will.
And
okay.
it.
So he, when he dies, as part of his will, he's saying, here's how I want to exercise the power of appointment that Shirley gave him.
Yes, exactly.
That only manifests itself because he survived her.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so what does he do with that power of appointment?
Basically, as far as we understand, he attempts to name, it just says it goes to all of my grandchildren. So there's 10 of them. And so the question
that
becomes.
So bypassing Elliot,
Lisa and Jill.
And then Ted and Pam.
Ted and Pam already out, mm-hmm. and so the five children are out and the 10 grandchildren are in.
Exactly, but there's a question of whether that power of appointment was used more broadly than was given to him.
In what case does that get litigated?
That would not be in this case. It would have to be in a case either involving his estate, or likely his trust, or maybe a case that was against his trust and then put into his estate.
Okay,
so we don't even know if that happened.
Right,
you know, we're in a back
now to Shirley's estate.
Yes.
So it sounds like Elliot may be either him or maybe his children, if the power of appointment was executed, a beneficiary of Shirley's trust. I'm working backwards. Okay. So he wants to get information to make sure that what Shirley owned at the time or had ownership interest in at the time of her death was transferred properly from, through her will, poured over to her trust.
Yes.
Is that what he wants?
Yes.
Okay. Is that something that he's legally entitled to?
Your Honor, it's our contention he's not legally entitled to it.
Okay.
And he's not legally entitled to it because he did a full waiver of every interest in the estate.
Okay. So, but for the waiver, I probably worded that wrong. But for the waiver, would he be interested?
His children would technically be interested.
Okay.
Because none of the children are beneficiaries that you correctly stated.
Well, the trust is the beneficiary, but now you have the trust.
That's correct,
Your Honor. Because the power of attorney is out of court.
Power of appointment.
A power of appointment.
Right, by assignment to all the grandchildren.
Okay, but I'm trying to, like, get past some of the things that have to be probably ultimately litigated in some other forum. Are we down to whether the waiver was validly executed or not? Because that would be coming down.
I think that's a bulk of it, certainly, Your Honor, yes.
Right.
Whether the waiver was validly executed.
Okay. If the waiver was not validly executed, what Mr. Pratt's saying is he wants financial information that may include accounting so he can determine E. Elliott that what Ted is PR transferred over to from Shirley's estate, poured over into her trust, was what should have gone.
On accounting of the probate estate he's talking about.
The probate estate.
Yeah, I think theoretically you could arguably ask for that, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. So
on behalf of his children.
Okay, so what's the harm? I know you attacked the waiver, okay, and you say it was valid. He says it's not. What's the harm by giving information?
Well,
the financial disclosure of what Shirley's estate poured over into the trust.
Simply, Your Honor, that he signed a waiver and we think this is all done behind us.
Okay.
If he wants to proceed about a trust accounting, he can get that same information in the trust arena by asking you on the receipt
side. Every time that happens in the trust case, everyone says there's some bar because you didn't ask for it or get it in the estate case. That's the experience I get when that happens. So,
we would certainly.
Well, I mean, in Shirley's estate, was there an inventory done?
I presume there was.
There was.
Now, I can tell you, Your Honor, that I just want to clarify if I might, Judge. You asked me not to be an advocate, but a couple of facts I want to clear up for you. The co-personal representatives signed in the state are Mr. Spallina and Mr. Tesher, not Ted Bernstein.
Okay.
Judge French has signed Bernstein in the state,
okay.
In case you weren't aware of that.
Okay.
But to go back.
I guess I'm happy. That's good. Let someone else do it.
Yeah. I don't know. We brought that up the last year, but I don't know if you recall it, not Judge. So we would like to address the waiver. Yes, there was an accounting done. I don't know if an inventory done. I don't know if we have. Was there an inventory done?
Probably so.
Yeah, it would certainly be in the file if it was done.
Even if you did a waiver, I can still give the inventory. I can open it. It's confidential, but I can give it to
them. We have the inventory.
We
received the inventory.
Not the inventory. What's the other? Was there an accounting in the estate of Shirley?
No, we waived one.
Okay.
That's the point.
Right. So So what are the other financial documents other than inventory that Elliot wants?
Judge, if I might, the inventory was the $25,000 tangible personal property which all went to Mr. Bernstein and survived his son.
Okay, and that's it.
That's it.
So according to the inventory, there were no assets poured over from Shirley's estate into her trust.
It was all funded through debt. That's my understanding.
Okay.
All
right.
I mean, we don't have any documents to support that verification. We don't know how the attorneys have been paid, and you know, we don't have any verification that that were the only assets that were in there. Plus, I know
is a verified document,
right? And
well, that's kind of a good, you know. So you have an inventory that says personality only, and you know, I could look it up and see if I can get it, but you have it ready. So if that's what it says, then Ted, as PR, is saying that's what I turned over as PR, and so Simon got the personal fee.
Simon was the PR at that time around.
Okay, Simon said it for himself. Okay, he took it, because that's right, because Ted
just got appointed.
Ted got appointed when Simon died. And then nothing then is passing through the will, and Mr. Mansieri just said to the extent to which Shirley's trust may have assets, it was funded pre-death, which happened. And that, there's no document in the state that's going to verify that.
I mean, if that's truly the case, then why not producing a
copy? He's saying that's the case. I don't, you know, other than the lawyer saying that, I don't know. He's saying that was done, but more importantly, probably Elliot can maybe do whatever he wants to do with the trust case to see what went into the trust, and that would be what Mr. Mansieri is describing as the pre-death funding. But for purposes of Shirley's estate, trying to put things in a step-by-step process, if her will says what it said, the inventory says no assets other than personal fee of Shirley that went to Simon. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm here to determine should the estate be closed and then go to Judge French at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, what else is there really to accomplish, even though we may have had the problem with the waivers? I understand that. But now they reaffirm that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, spank somebody, they may deserve to get spanked for doing something wrong there, but mm-hmm. how does that put dollars or benefits in Elliot's pocket?
Well, I mean, I guess part of it is the fact that, you know, there hasn't been really any information that had been provided all along. He never even got any information until the estate was actually closed. So, I mean, I think that's part of his reasoning for you know, wanting to reopen the estate and try to get the financial information. I think he's entitled to
the answer. The answer is none.
Right.
There is no estate they're representing. I mean, I can put that under oath, let you question it, but the issue is, which I will do, whether there are any assets other than what's reflected on the inventory. Mm-hmm. And he'll say, I assume that global cemetery just told me, he'll say no. And so, you can't produce financial documents on things that don't exist to the matter that we're speaking about.
I agree, but there could be an accounting that would produce.
But there's no, you're not going to produce an accounting of nothing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the purpose of an accounting is to get some verification that what was processed through the PR's hands is accurate. They'll mm-hmm. testify in a moment, just what Mr. Mansieri probably told us, that the answer is nothing.
Okay.
So, how does that?
I agree if what their representation, you know, what their representations are true, you know, it's possible that we could receive some financial information, and there have been
other than the, I mean, we got the inventory that shows basically that there were no estate assets under the personal deed, which I assume is not an issue here. And so today, you know, I'm not going to have them draw up an accounting that says nothing, because that doesn't do any good. Who's that going to benefit if he said, you know, we gave those to a process of actually filing an accounting that says the personal, what the inventory says, the personal deed and nothing else.
I
Your Honor, my client questions the accuracy of the inventory and would like the ability to utilize the state proceedings to verify its accuracy.
Well, I appreciate that you challenge that, but you haven't told me what basis he challenges that on.
Well, by virtue of the fact that he believes his mother and father were worth millions and millions of dollars, yet the inventory of the estate contains is only for $25,000.
Well, but we heard Mr. Mansieri tell us that Shirley transferred during her lifetime assets to her trust. You heard that as well. Plus, I know nothing about what Simon did with his estate. So that's the same as Simon, who didn't have owned assets shortly, and passed outside the estate. So the inventory is a narrow window of just that which passes through. There are people, and I'll say this to Elliot, we deal with this all the time, people sometimes are super rich. They don't even have a probate estate. Because everything is titled jointly, or they fund the trust in advance, and there's no probate. That's one, people don't like to have probate. So
that very well is what happened. But I'm willing to at least start. I want you to put on your client, take some testimony on me, because we've had accuracy issues, Mr. Mansieri.
Yes, sir.
The accuracy of the inventory. And then to state on the record what he knows about that there's no other, that he's done search for other assets but what's in the personal deed, and that there's nothing else that Shirley had in her probate estate to pour it over into their trust.
I'd like to put on two people that I could to address that.
You might want that, but I'll tell you who I want. I want the PR to do that for you, and then I'll see what happens. We'll see.
All right. Judge, to address these. I don't have a copy of the inventory at my disposal.
Okay, well, you have that.
If anybody has a copy, I'd be glad to use yours. And again, Judge, just to be clear, Ted Bernstein did not PR at the time this inventory was filed.
Okay, all right, but he's in charge of the estate once he takes it over.
Right, he's got to do it a couple weeks ago.
Okay, all right, well, yes. So he's done his work and he'll address it. Otherwise, I have to give him more time to do his work and not close the estate.
Okay,
very good. But you want the estate closed, right?
We want to address with the court order saying, yeah, like I said, if you're on the issue of discharge.
Well, I know, but you want to file a letter?
Eventually, yes, sir.
Let's get caught up.
Mr. Mercer, please. Judge, I was still waiting for the inventory.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
You have it?
I don't think so.
I have a question, Mr. Mansieri. I want to make sure of one thing. The inventory was signed by Simon August
29,
2011.
When
did he die?
Simon died about a year ago, Your Honor. So he died September.
He was alive then?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Right.
It was September 2012. He died.
All right.
fire assembly. So who doesn't attend the meeting?
The original petition to discharge that fire?
That's the original petition, that was probably for Simon. That we got to move the pay, Your Honor. Thank you, sir.
All right, raise your right hand. Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and the truth.
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, counsel.
Could you read the record, please?
Ted Bernstein.
Mr. Bernstein, are you one of the children of Shirley and Simon Bernstein?
Yes, I am.
And do you have any siblings?
Yes, I do.
What are their names?
Pam, Simon, Elliot Bernstein, Jill, and Tony, and Lisa Friedman.
Are you aware of the fact that your father, Simon Bernstein, was the main personal representative of your mother, Shirley Bernstein, the state?
I am.
Did you have any hands-on working participation as far as the administration of your mother's estate with your father?
Did not.
Did not. I'm going to show you documents that the court bailiff has given us, which is entitled Inventory. Are you familiar with your father's signature?
I am.
Okay. Tell me, take a look at this document on page 2, which numbers page 2, and tell me if that's your father's signature to the best of your knowledge.
Yes, it is.
All right. Are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Robert Scalina?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and how do you know that name and how is it familiar to you?
He is the personal representative of my father's estate.
Okay. Do you know whether or not he's one of the attorneys who handled you the administration of your mother's estate?
I believe he is.
All right. Now, this inventory reflects and these are assets that would be in your mother's individual name, not in her trust, not joint name, not with a beneficiary name on them, of an estimated value of $25,000, described as furniture, furnishings, household goods, and personal effects. You see that?
I see that.
All right. Do you have any personal knowledge as to the accuracy of the information here as signed under penalties of perjury by your father?
I think that is my personal knowledge is that would be accurate.
Okay. Do you have any information of your personal knowledge that you acquired or knew about from the time prior to you becoming appointed personal representative of your mother's estate, or since you became appointed personal representative of your mother's estate, that would materially change this $25,000 figure?
I do not.
I don't have the answer for the question, Your Honor.
You didn't prepare this inventory, did you?
I did not.
You weren't involved in preparation at all?
I wasn't.
You have, and you were only appointed as personal have you even been appointed as personal representative of your mother's estate yet?
My mother's estate?
Yes.
I believe that I have.
Okay. Do you know if the letters of administration that have actually been issued?
I do not.
Okay. You haven't seen any letters of administration?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. When, since your appointment, or there was an order that was entered, what efforts have you made to determine the value of your mother's estate?
Of my mother's estate?
Exactly.
I have not done that.
Okay. On what basis, if you haven't done any investigation yourself, why would you say that this $25,000 estimate of the value of the estate is accurate?
Well, upon my father's death, I had to have the assets of the estate inventory, and that was done. So that was the combination of my mother's estate and my father's at the time of his death. And so based on that valuation at that time, that number was and within reason of this number, so I think that, you know, we're talking within generalities, the numbers that are approximates, we're pretty close to the numbers that are stated here.
And you're not serving as personal representative of your father's estate, are you?
I am not.
Okay. And you're just talking about the $25,000 value of the household furnishings and not whether or not there's any other assets out there. Is that right?
That's correct.
Right.
He was appointed September 24th, by the way.
I have no further questions.
All right. You can step down. Thanks. You want to proceed with the
call? Well, Mrs. Spolino.
8 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
We're going to the truth, Officer Denver.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Spolino, good afternoon. And you've heard we've been asking questions about this inventory. Are you familiar with this document?
Yes, I am.
All right. And tell the court how you're familiar with it.
This was the inventory that we filed in the Shirley Bernstein estate.
Were you one of the attorneys that represented Simon Bernstein as personal representative of the estate of Shirley Bernstein?
Yes, I was.
All right. And did you work with Simon Bernstein on creating this inventory to be filed in the probate court?
Yes, I did.
All right. And did you meet and speak with Simon Bernstein in the furtherance of the preparation of the document?
Yes, we did.
All right. And that inventory reflects an estimated value of $25,000, comprised of furniture, furnishings, household goods, and personal effects. Do you see that?
Yes.
All right. Based on your dealings with Simon Bernstein, do you have any information or knowledge which would in any way contradict the value that's reflected on that inventory?
No, I do not.
All right. Have you come to learn in the furtherance of the administration of the estate of Simon Bernstein, because you're one of the co-PRs of that estate, correct?
Yes.
All right. That there is any information that you learned in the furtherance of being a personal representative of Simon's estate that the $25,000 figure on this inventory is inaccurate?
No, I have not.
All right.
This was a reasonable
estimate. Now, did you or your firm handle the preparation of the estate planning documents for Shirley Bernstein?
Yes, we did.
All right. And one of the documents we've heard that Shirley Bernstein had was what I'm going to call the Shirley Bernstein Trust. You know what I'm referring to?
Yes.
All right. Did you work with Shirley Bernstein in furtherance of funding that trust while she was alive?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And to the best of your knowledge, other than the assets that are on this inventory, and excluding the thing that you know would not be included, such as joint property and those kinds of assets, were all of her material assets, to the best of your knowledge, funded into her trust before she died?
As far as we know, yes.
I don't have any other questions, Your Honor.
And you said that you worked on preparing the inventory in Shirley's estate?
Yes.
Can you tell me, was that something that you handled personally, or was that something that you delegated to an assistant?
I called Simon personally.
Okay. But was there any effort that you made to contact, like, say, banks or third parties to determine out if there was any other assets?
When we had a discussion about what to put on the inventory, yes.
Okay.
And he said that this was all we wanted to put on the inventory.
So basically, this inventory is based off of information that you were given by Simon Bernstein.
Correct.
And you didn't really take, you basically took his word for it and didn't do any investigation of your own, is that right?
That's correct.
I have no further questions.
Okay. So, there's an inventory in, you're the PR of Simon? Or?
Yes.
And what's the status of this estate?
His estate is pending. There is litigation ongoing in the estate. We have waited on distributing anything from the estate due to the pending litigation, Your Honor.
Tom, are you in Tori and Simon's estate?
Yes, sir.
Has the inventory been published?
I believe that, Your Honor.
Okay, so you have the inventory from Simon's estate?
No.
Do you object to him having it?
No.
All right, thanks, Jesse. All right, so, technically, the hearing today was to deal with the improprieties of pleadings, meaning the prior waivers. I heard a lot about that last time, and I know you all brought in witnesses. Mr. Roth is here, obviously, because of Ms. Moran's potential difficulty, but I'm trying to think of putting substance ahead of form to determine how it benefits the estate to go into that issue any further. You have a position on that, Mr. Pratt, now that Elliot has a chance to have a benefit of counsel? And you've seen the newest round of waivers. There is no petition for discharge filed yet by Ted Bernstein. If he files one and the estate for some reason is not ready to be closed or shouldn't be closed, we can deal with that at that time. Mm-hmm. But sometimes things happen, and to the other side, not having made a final decision on this, what I heard was not good about what I heard took place with respect to the processing of these documents, the waivers that children signed, especially the one that was signed, reportedly was signed. But it doesn't really matter. And I think I'd want it to matter before more time and money and energy is put into that, because it's not going to put money in anybody's pocket, and what good does it do? Just to tell Ms. Moran that she did a bad thing. That's what is the case. I don't know if it is. I'm not finding that.
Here's the main thing, and I'm not too concerned about the validity of the waivers now that they've signed new waivers, they filed them.
Sure.
I think what we're trying to accomplish here is not to throw anybody under the bus or burn anybody. We want a clear picture of what happened in this entire estate plan.
Okay.
And the parents died.
I
know,
but there's only, Elliot is entitled to that which anyone else in his position is entitled to, no more, no less. So I'm not restricting for am I expanding on that concept?
Okay, the law, there's laws that govern that, that what are you entitled to? They're saying that, you know, if he's, I mean, I don't know if there's a formal request in the Shirley's estate for any other documentation or the inventory that she now has, because there's nothing else that's filed, and if what they, what Ted says and what Mr. Spoonman says is true, if we requested a final accounting, we'd get the same thing and we'd talk to the issue, and we'd actually make sense. So,
my concern, though, is that we're not going to be in a giant rush to close the estate. Not that we want to turn this small portion of the...
There's no condition to close it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's be patient to see what happens, and, you know, there may be reasons not to or to close it, depending on what goes on elsewhere. But, you know, it's, given that, I don't even know, other than what we now see in the inventories, could be the two official documents, I don't know anything else about what monies may pass through anyone's hands. But, you know, this isn't a case of first impression, but what deals with what potential beneficiaries are entitled to and what they're not,
mm-hmm.
what trustees can provide and what not. So let's, let, you know, let's be patient and do it in the correct form. It seems like a lot of what you want to accomplish is going to take place before you approach. Or if you can...
I look at it, and I think you were right. I mean, this is a, we want to make sure that this piece of the puzzle is accurate, and if it is, you know, you might not ever see us again.
Right. And so, you know, they say, you know, she funded the trust before her lifetime. Maybe she had some assets that were jointly titled that went to others. You know, we never get, those are not probate assets. I mean, those go, and they go just like, you know, people want. She had a cash in a pillow, and it goes. So, okay. All right, so, I'm going to take no further action right now on the issue of alleged improprieties or defects in the form of the documents submitted to the court for furtherance of the closing of the estate that are shortly posted. I'm going to reserve on attorney fees and any other possible sanction if and when that matter becomes right for me to do so.
Your Honor, this
may not happen at all.
I want to address one thing you mentioned, just so everybody knows, we intend on filing a petition to close this estate very quickly.
Okay, but right. You know, I can't preempt
of course not.
And deal with that. We have to be patient, follow the rule.
Yes.
You file it, make sure, you know, you're going to make sure Elliot gets served. Okay, you'll serve him, and then he can do what he wants with it. You know, what you want. This is all rule driven.
Oh, no question about it, Your Honor.
Okay.
We have the original waiver. You don't, as you know, don't file in London Inc. anymore. We have them if you want to take them in open court.
Well, you're on e-file now, so, you know, e-files are good.
Okay. You know, and the rest of what we have on the record.
We get as little paper as we can here. I don't even get files, as you probably can tell. So, I think.
But we have them, Judge. I want to represent, we do have them.
Yes.
Can I just address the court,
sure.
Judge, just to try to save some time in the future?
Sure.
I represent Kimberly Moran. Judge, she has been charged by the state attorney's office in a direct information with improprieties regarding the notarization. She's fully cooperated with the sheriff's office, just so that you know, so there's no mystery here. She filed, or caused to be filed, the original waivers, which did not have a notarization. It was her, this is pursuant to her statement to the sheriff's office, it was her understanding that they did not need to be notarized. Apparently, Your Honor requires them to be notarized in order not to, quote, get in trouble with Mr. Spolina and Mr. Tesher for improperly filing unsworn to, unnotarized statements, waivers rather. She stated to the sheriff's office that she did that. She recognized what she did was wrong. We surrendered her to the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office jail on Friday. If she was called as a witness in this proceeding, she would respectfully invoke her Fifth Amendment privilege.
That's one reason why I had her stay outside and tried not to.
Thank you, Judge.
Bring her in because I.
And she's a secretary.
We don't cross over things between criminal and probate, and we were going to, you know, like leave it to another time and place.
She's a secretary that made a very poor choice of judgment, apparently based upon what I've been told by the state attorney's office and the detective that investigated the case. So I just wanted you to be aware of it, and it would be a waste of time for her to be subpoenaed again because she would invoke her privilege.
Okay, well, thank you. I mean, Mr. Pratt, I don't think there's any doubt she's not going to testify other than that she's here pursuant to, you know, a request to do that. And I would, you know, she took that quite a time to stick to that. And I don't know, that would benefit you anyway.
Well, I mean, if she were to, if she were to leave it, then we could draw whatever conclusions we want to. Well, the ramifications of, not that I plan on subpoenaing her in the future or that, you know, I intend to question her about this, but if she pleads the fifth in a civil case, then we can draw whatever conclusions we want to from, you know, that official.
You could draw adverse inferences from her, but she's not, she's nobody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not going to get you anywhere. Yes, I'll draw adverse interests, you know, and then it gives you. So,
well, there's also, I mean, there's other ways to get it in because there's.
Well, I don't think there's really any doubt about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm aware of it. I just don't like to make, you know, more trouble for people that.
I don't intend to.
You know, really, it's not warranted. I didn't know she was charged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's obviously consequences that she's not charged with a crime. And so, you know, dealing with all that sounds to be enough. You know, so let's. Leave that part and go on the loan for right now to see where it gets everybody. It reaffirms my internal position that I made along with my case manager, Kahara, to require waivers to be notarized.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the case example of benchmark as to why that's going to stay that way. And, we did it for a reason, not having this case in mind, but it's important. You know, we changed that rule soon after I. This is the only case where we've had a problem with waivers and challenges later on. So it's good idea to keep on doing that. Now we just need to make sure we otherwise correctly, but I don't think that's widespread problem. Okay. All right, so here in order 1-1 that I indicated we'll be done in the very next few weeks. Okay, thanks everybody.
All right,
thank you, Ron.
I'll get a proposal tomorrow.
All right.
With you to call your coffee.
Well, when you get downstairs,
I'm sorry, you had to wait here.
That's okay.
Thank you.
She's already facing criminal proceedings, you know.
Except on the wrong thing.
Well.
I mean, she hasn't attested to all the other, there's a will and a trust, we ask.
Yeah.
We want to know. Did she forge all these documents?
Well, that's an issue that we, is for another day, you know. We have one hearing.
I think we did okay, we kept it open.
Yeah, I mean, that was our goal.
Right.
And it's kept open for now.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yes.
You notice how the judge is looking at the
Here's the number.
Okay.
954.
Oh, whoops, wait, I'm in letters. Elliot.
Got it? Just use that to retrieve my messages from the answering machine, from the answering service.
Okay.
And then they go straight to my computer where I can read them.
Okay. I go that there now.
I think you have to make a
there?
Call. Make
that
a
it?
Call. I have to do is turn the phone around.
Okay, that's that.
And then,
okay. Menu.
Now, where do you pick up the phone? Over here.
Okay.
There.
Well, that's messaging.
Messaging?
Search now.
Go to
okay.
Messaging.
Okay.
Do you have a cell phone?
I do.
It is on, right?
Huh?
Yes.